Well, welcome to the first of hopefully many monthly Blue Waters user teleconference for now, and we'll start transitioning to a more webinar format for user information for Blue Waters. And so my name is Greg Bauer. I'd like to welcome you all to join me. Let's see, a couple things before we get started. First of all, we're trying out recording this webinar so that we, our teleconference, so that we can make it available possibly for playback later, and also maybe getting a transcript of it for people who aren't able to join the teleconference. So just keep that in mind. And the other thing is, if you don't have a question, please try to mute your phone. I'll go ahead and try to do a system mute if we get too much noise, but I'd like to leave it for the participants to mute their phone. If they have any questions at all during the actual, during the teleconference, just go ahead and make a comment, and we'll gladly answer your question if possible, and then just continue on with the discussion or presentation. So first, I'd like to introduce Phil Kramer, who many of you know, is our Deputy Director of the Blue Waters Project. And so he'll lead us off, and then I'll take over and continue on with the presentation. And we're getting a lot of background already, so if the person who just joined could hit mute, that would be great.
All right, thank you very much. First, I'd also like to welcome you to the first of our monthly discussions. We view these discussions as being very important, not just to provide the latest information, but also to have a dialogue with the people who are using Blue Waters so that we understand what people are doing and also can make improvements as we go forward. So we're looking forward to a series of discussions, some of which will, some parts of which will be status and updates, and other parts of which will be new information, and then obviously the dialogue that we have going on. It's been an exciting time the last couple months for us. As you know, we have started full service production in April. We had our launch of services on March 28th. And then started full service production and all the activities a few days after that. We avoided declaring it on happening on March on April 1st, so the official date is April 2nd. But with that, we're very excited to have all the science teams using the system. Right now we have not only the NSF teams, but now Great Lakes Consortium for Petascale Computing, GLCPC teams, 10 of those have joined us, and in the future we'll having other allocation processes and teams from those joining us as well on the system. I believe that all the NSF teams and the GLCPC teams have now a clear understanding of the allocation processes that have gone on and where they stand. So that's also good as well. But Greg has a series of items to talk about. Some are actually already about expanding the system as well as changing some of the services, and we'll go through those with that. And in the future, I'd also like to see that if you have topics you'd like to cover on these meetings, you send us that information. We'll do our best to cover the topics as well so we can have a dialogue that's very responsive. But with that, I'll turn it over to Greg to start with the slides, and then we'll see how we go from there. You want to do a roll call?
Sure. I guess we could do a quick roll call, and that way we'll know on the call help us out. So if just one at a time, I guess it'll probably get trampled a bit. But if you're on the call, could you please let us know?
Jay Kerr.
Dmitry Pekorovsky from San Diego.
Mike Knox from University of Minnesota.
Adrian Middleton from NCAR.
Scott Callahan.
Lee Orff, Central Michigan.
Scott Callahan from SCEC.
Various elements, U of I, Urbana.
Steve Gottlieb, Indiana.
Phil Macron, SCEC.
Daniel Parson from Sloan Kettering, New York.
Tung Yema from College of William Mary. Karen Tomko, Ohio Supercomputer Center.
Beadler Cray.
Okay, it sounds like we've got quite a few people attending the call, so thank you very much. All right, so the as I posted in the email earlier this morning, the slides for today's webinar or teleconference are available on the portal, and we'll be following basically the agenda that's posted on slide number two. So as Bill mentioned, we'll discuss several things. One of the things we'd like to lead off with is the current system usage of the system of the machine. Some of you have been on the machine notice that it's a little low at the moment, so we'll get into some issues with respect to the system usage and allocation. Then we'll go into a discussion of some growth in the system. We're going to be adding some additional XK nodes to the system. Then we'll discuss some upcoming changes to resource management and job scheduling that are either in progress or planned. Then we'll go through and bring everyone up to date on what's going on with storage. I think most of you who have been running on the machine are pretty comfortable with or knowledgeable of what's going on with how we handle our file system and HPSS. Then we'll go into a brief discussion about some recommendations we have for application resiliency, talking about maybe how to craft your job so that your jobs are a little more tolerant to node failure, and also discuss checkpoint and restart. Characteristics, things that you should consider about how often to do checkpointing. And once we get near the end, we'll kind of start summarizing things up and discuss about requests for publications and presentations that reference work either on Blue Water or funding through the NSF PRAC allocation process or through GLTPC. Then we'll have a brief discussion about upcoming events and topics for future Blue Waters teleconferences and webinars. And, of course, then open discussion for any questions that you might have. And feel free during the call to just let us know if you have a question or a discussion or something that concerns you, and we'll address it as soon as we can. All right, so slide number three, we'll start off with system usage or system utilization. So many of you know that we started charging for against allocations starting April 2nd, and traditionally, that means that the usage starts to drop a bit while people make sure they understand how much time they have and how much time they need to get their science done. And it's been over a week now, and we're still seeing pretty low utilization of the system. And we know there's a significant workload out there, and so we would like to encourage teams who have some of the larger allocations to maybe take advantage of the low utilization of the system and get jobs put on there that can start filling up the machine to a higher utilization level. One advantage is that when you're allocating jobs at the point where the machine's kind of empty, you get very good node allocation selection. So we know that you get a nice preferential view or allocation of nodes on the system. So we're trying to encourage teams to avoid waiting to use your allocation. It's pretty natural to do that, but you know that as you move towards the end of the allocation period, that puts substantial pressure on the system to get all the jobs through, and not everyone will be able to utilize their allocation. So what we do prefer is that teams try to plan out kind of an even usage over the allocation year, so that if you take your allocation and divide by the period that it's allocated for and try to meet that burn rate of so many node hours or million node hours per month, then that'll help us avoid substantial congestion as we're towards the end of the allocation year. There is some staggering of some of the allocations, but it's probably not enough to really avoid the end of the allocation year backlog. So with that in mind, we've been looking at several different options to avoid that kind of allocation congestion at the end of the allocation year. And so we've had some discussions internally about how we can try to encourage people to encourage teams to use their allocation wisely. So there are two. One's kind of a carrot and one's kind of a stick is I guess we'll start with the stick. The stick is to monitor your usage every quarter and look at how much of your allocation you've used and how much is left. And if we find that the burn rate isn't sufficient to really get us toward the end of the period with adequate consumption of your allocation, that we would start maybe reallocating some of that allocation time. So this is something that we've been looking at, and we haven't implemented it, of course, but we've had some discussion on it, and so we would like for you to provide us some input on how you feel with this kind of method for encouraging use of the system. So as a former user, I know that I would be a little inhibited by this, but from the other side, it really makes the system perform much better if we try to encourage uniform usage of the system. But we do realize that some teams have some kind of periodic episodic usage pattern, and so we realize that, and so we would like the teams that have or expect to have that kind of usage pattern to let us know, and we would try to take that into account. So
the percentage number, Greg, is the percentage of what is left that is returned?
No, at the moment, it would be the percentage of the total allocation. So gradually, the total would be reducing there. It's always less than where you'd expect. So if you look at it on a quarterly basis, it's not a linear calculation.
So if at the end of the third quarter you've been off by 10% of your usage, since you have more, or 11% of your usage, you lose 60% of your whole yearly allocation?
Well, so you have 40% left, which is higher than what the progression is. Yeah.
I don't get it, Bill. Sorry.
Well, so if you are using it three quarters of the way into the year, if you haven't been used, so you're right. If you use 10%, then okay, that's or 30. You have 10% more than three quarters, right? 35%.
Right.
Not a problem. If you're 36%, then you are above, it would go down to 40% of the total allocation. So you'd still be fine from that point of view. If you're 40% or higher, then it would go down to whatever 40% of the allocation is.
So this is more like you can bank no more than that? I'm still confused. I'm sorry. Maybe if you wrote a formula, I'd understand it.
All right. So the concept is after the first 3 months, if you haven't, so there's leeway there, right? So the cutoff would be 90%.
Right.
Even though you're 75 or 25% into the year.
Right.
And we would only reduce the allocation by 5%. So it progressively gets a steeper reduction simply because you can't make up the time at the end of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it progressively gets steeper in terms of the amount of time that would be moved out of the allocations.
If there aren't any further questions on that,
we're interested in your feedback. We do have from NSF and others have been clear that something like this would be going on, so that not everything backs up at the end of the year and everybody gets terrible service. If you have other suggestions about how to make use of this, please send us some of those. We will have this in place over the next 2 months so that we can actually use it in a couple months and progress from there. But we're exposing that to remind you that we have always said that there would be some proration of time not being used, so it doesn't all back up into the end. But if you have other suggestions, please let us know.
Yep. And you can either email me or you can send an item to the Help Plus BW Zero Ticket System or contact Bill as well. All right, so moving on to slide number 4, we'll talk about system upgrade already. So one of the things that we're doing in the next couple months is a addition to the XK part of the system. So if those of you who have come to some of the workshops and taken, I guess, the most recent workshop and took a tour of the machine room, and when you're walking in there, you would have seen what looked like a corridor or an aisle on the left-hand side of the compute part of the system, and between the XDP systems and the first row of the first column of compute cabinets. And that really isn't a walkway or access by design. That's just because the system wasn't fully populated to begin with. And what we've done is gone ahead and get an increase in the number of XK cabinets in the system. So we're going to add in one column, effectively, of XK cabinets. And that provides an increase to the number of XK nodes up from 3072 up to 4,224 XK nodes. And they'll be identical to the current existing XK nodes on the system. They'll be the same Interlagos processor and the same NVIDIA Kepler GPU. One thing this has is it has an impact on the overall torus dimension of the system. So previously we were had a torus dimension of 23 by 24 by 24. And so that bumps up the total torus dimension to be 24 by 24 by 24 for what it's worth. It doesn't impact necessarily the XE, the CPU part of the torus. And it's not really a part, but it's the location of the XE nodes on the torus. They'll be shifted a little bit as we insert the location of these XK nodes into a contiguous region of existing XK nodes in the torus. So one thing that we're currently working on with Cray and Bob Fielder's on the call, who we're working with, is that it possibly will change the shape of the XK region. For people who've been running large XK jobs on Blue Waters, they may be looking into what kind of node placement you're getting within the XK region. And the current topology for the XK nodes is basically a 8x8x24 contiguous block of nodes in the Gemini torus fabric. And we've been looking into, while we're adding additional XK nodes in the associated Geminis, we're possibly changing that torus dimension, the shape of that region in the overall torus, to better increase the aggregate bandwidth available within the XK region. So for applications that are running on the GPUs that are doing a significant amount of MPI communication, this will improve the application performance for those particular set of applications running at scale. So that's one thing that we're looking at. There'll be some other movement of some of the nodes within the system that shouldn't have any visible impact for the user. We have to make some accommodation for movement of some of the nodes responsible for I/O, for example. But we feel that should be mostly transparent to the user. So one thing that this brings up is basically the timeline and the impact on access to the system. So inserting a significant number of cabinets and having to redo some of the cabling will incur a modest outage where the users no one's able to run jobs on the Blue Water system at the moment, at least with our current expectations.
Well, so yeah, it's not going to change. There'll be times where it's not available for on the order of several weeks.
And so at the moment, we're still working on a firm timeline for that, but currently that'll be happening sometime towards the end of May or after the end of May.
Greg, do we know the expected total number of, let's say, down days that'll be mixed in there?
About 35. It'll be contiguous.
Yeah.
In about 21 days where it's physically taken apart, and about 2 weeks of testing where it would range between system testing and some type of maybe friendly use without charging. But right now it looks like it's physically
to take it apart and put it back together again is going to be about a three-week effort.
Right. So we'll do our best to mitigate what impact that has. Well, during that time, you will have access to the login nodes, for example, and the import-export nodes. You'll be able to move data around on your system. You won't be denied access to your data, but you just won't be able to run into jobs or intermittently run jobs during that time. Any questions on the XK upgrade?
Yeah, another one from
internal.
From the internal gallery.
Yeah.
How will that impact my PRAC's allocation time? Do they get any padding at the end for that, or they need to get busy now to make up for it?
No, that's already in for the PRACs. Irene had already accounted that in the time period, right? So she's made it a 15-month period rather than a 12-month period.
Okay.
When will we get an update on the exact dates?
The dates are set.
Are they set? Okay. Yeah. All right. So we'll send out a notification for the dates.
I'll look it up.
Okay, Bill.
Yeah. I mean, it may change by a day or two, but it's not going to change by the order of weeks.
Yeah, basically,
like when go.
After Memorial Day, we'll begin. So sometime the end of May, going into June.
So at the very end, let me look it up and we'll come back. So keep going.
Okay. All right. So slide number five. We'll discuss some upcoming changes to resource management and job scheduling on the system.
So this is the carrot, right?
Yeah, right. So we have some carrots that we're trying to encourage. So we'll get into that once we start talking about job scheduling priorities. So one of the things that we've been looking at aggressively is upgrading to a newer version of Torque and Moab. So many of you know that we're still running an older version of Torque and Moab, which has been fairly stable, but there are several issues that we've been working with Cray and with Adaptive to resolve and get us up to Torque 4 and Moab 7. Many of you who have been running on Titan, for example, are running with some combination of more current versions of, more newer versions of Torque and Moab. So by going to Torque 4 and Moab 7, we hope to improve some of the runtime performance, not application performance necessarily, but the time it takes to start up applications, time it takes for applications to complete, scheduling, better responsiveness from the reservation part of the system. Many of you have noticed that sometimes some of the commands can be slow to return, so we're hoping to improve that. Part of that's due to a change in the location of some of the resource provisioning for Moab and Torque, the high availability configuration by moving the server off of the mainframe as it is. Plus, there's a lot of numerous bug fixes. Probably the one issue that we really want to have resolved and that we've had some interaction with some users with is being able to specify reliably a host list. So many of you would like to be able to specify a certain set of nodes that reliably give you a good performance, and for a smaller node count, that seems to work, but when you do several thousand nodes, that seems to be problematic with our current version of Moab and Torque. So that's probably the biggest win for us with respect to the application performance side, is being able to specify reliably host lists. You think that's a big win for us. Moving on to the job scheduling priority. So during the friendly user phase, we basically had just two qualities of service for running jobs. We had a regular queue available and the debug and interactive quality of service managed by a queue, not implemented using the queue syntax. So we're changing things a little bit. We're still going to have the regular QoS and the debug interactive QoS, but we're introducing two other levels. One's called a high level, high QoS, quality of service, and one's a low. So we'll kind of start with what we call the carrot. So the low quality of service. This is something that, as the name kind of denotes, it's a job that you want to put in there with.
You're going to say it's not low quality of service.
Yeah, it's not low quality.
It's low priority.
Yeah, low priority quality of service. And basically, those are jobs that you want to have run, but you're willing to wait until a period of time where there won't be any competition for the resources that you're requesting. And to reward you for that, being able to wait for nodes to be available, and also that the job will be preemptable for a certain period, over a certain period of time, will be a charge factor of half the normal charging factor for usage. So we're hoping that this will be attractive to some people who have workloads that can be spread out and they don't have to have them done right away, and they can write their jobs in such a way that they're grantable and can take advantage of some kind of interruptible service workload. So there'll still be the regular QoS, which most of you will use, and then we also have a high quality service, which just increases the priority of that, those jobs, and associated with that will be an increase of the charge factor. And to make it commensurate with the low QoS, the charging factor for that will be 2 instead of 1. And you might wonder why the charge factor for debug and interactive is the same as regular, even though it has a higher priority, and we don't really penalize you for wanting to do debugging or interactive work. But we do have, of course, the current restrictions for debugging and interactive so that you don't try to run your workload using the debug or interactive QoS. Discourage that. We've had some discussions through our ticketing system about how many jobs users can have in a queue, because sometimes certain workloads seem to create large numbers of jobs in the queue, and people are worried about getting their job through the queue in a timely fashion. So we document here what job limits we will be implementing shortly. So we'll have two policies, one a per-user policy and one a group policy. So the policy will be 20 running jobs per user and 100 per group. And that's basically to help accommodate all the different workloads that we've seen with the different projects, through either the NSF-TREC projects or some of the GLCPC projects have a wide degree of number of jobs that they need to run and how big those jobs are. And the other one that's probably of interest is, you know, you might have 100 jobs in the queue, but how many of them actually accrue priority? And so we're limiting that to a per-user policy of 20 jobs that will accrue priority in the queue at any given time while your jobs are sitting in the queue waiting to run.
Question.
So those are changes that are not yet implemented, fully implemented. Some of them are there already, but some are not, and we'll send out a note once we have all these changes to the job scheduling priorities implemented. And then the other one that many of you have encountered is the daily schedule. So we, during the friendly user period, we try to encourage or make it easy for people to do pretty large-scale debugging. And to do that, we had a period of time from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. where you could do short but very wide jobs. We were finding that that's fine during friendly user, but now that we're trying to meet certain usage goals of trying to keep the utilization of the machine up to a target number, it causes a lot of unnecessary or unwanted drains, especially when we don't have a lot of wide job mix to backfill in during those drains. So we're going to start reducing the maximum job size that can run between business hours from the full machine down to something on the order of, I think, 10,000 nodes. Some of that to ease up on the draining, and it's also ties in well with the maximum DDT license pool that we have at the moment. So we have a smaller cap on the license pool, which we can get increased for short periods of time when needed from the vendor. So that's part of the reason for making changes to the daily schedule. Those have not been implemented yet, but they will be hopefully in the next few weeks. Some of that will ease the transition between daytime and the overnight running. So some jobs might start earlier if the system is available, even though it's not 6 p.m. And it will also allow jobs to run over into the morning hours to soften the rough transition. Many of you who watch the tools that we have available on the portal can see those transitions cause significant draining and impact overall utilization of the machine. And just one note, we've had some users who like to monitor their jobs when they're in the queue and starting up, and when we have significant numbers of users doing that and a large number of jobs in the queue, we've had some issues of scale with some of the tools like QStat or ShowQueue, and so we really want people to avoid trying to monitor the changes in your job status at a scale finer than maybe 3 to 5 minutes, because that's about the normal update period for what we have for Moab and Torque right now. So there are some users who tend to do watch, if those are familiar, watch dash n with maybe a few seconds, and that doesn't really make any sense for us. So we encourage you to, if you're going to do that, to do it 3 to 5 minutes, and we're implementing some schemes that will cache, help relieve the pressure when people do that, and caching the status of QStat and ShowQ over a more tolerable time period.
I have a question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
I'm trying to run an interactive job, and says job exceeds queue resource limits. Is it interactive enabled currently?
Yes, it should be. Was that Apron telling you that, or was that the
use up?
Okay.
Node number of nodes, or do you just supply a dash I?
Use up dash I and dash B dash L nodes equal 116 XE.
Oh, okay, that should be fine. Could you just submit a ticket in one of
I just wasn't sure if it seems like there are no interactive nodes available, and I've tried it a few times.
You have to you shouldn't get a message. Sometimes it takes up to 3 to 5 minutes to get to get a job to start, but you shouldn't get this error message. That sounds like there's just a syntax problem with the way you're doing your queue steps. So if you could just go into the IM. Probably the quickest way is just to go in through IM through the portal instant messaging, and the on-call AUS person can pick that up.
Okay.
See, Bill, did you want to jump back to the next case schedule real quick?
Yeah, actually, so I think the actual size of interactive runs is going to be around 7,600 nodes, not 10,000. Looking at, I just lost it on my page. Hang on. Looking at the current rough schedule that we have for the XK upgrade, it would begin the week of the 27th of May, and the exact day is still working out. Plan is that there will be 3 solid weeks of outage, so the first 2 weeks of June will be solid weeks of outage, and then we have a lot of probable testing to make sure the system is returned in at least as good of a state as it was before we took it apart, and then during that time period, I'm not sure, we'll progress as it goes, but there may be some short period of friendly user time where we're not dealing with things going against the allocations, but it would be only on the order of a week or two, probably less than a week by the time we get done with our system testing at scale. So the 5 weeks starting the 27th of May is the target. I will say that if there is a consensus among the science teams that a shift in that schedule is important, then please let us know, say, over the next week, right? So if that's going to really perturb something, I can't promise for any individual team because there'll always be something, but give us your feedback on those dates. We probably have the flexibility of shifting by a couple weeks. We can't shift by a whole lot of other reasons. So, but if a particular date there within that range makes a big difference, and it impacts a lot of people, then we look at shifting that and adjusting with Craig. But you'd have to give us some feedback, say, within the next week if those dates are problematic. So, again, the week of the 27th is when it would start. 21 days of downtime is the estimate. It may go faster. It hopefully won't go much longer. And then about 14 days of testing the system to make sure that it actually is back the way it was and fully operational.
July 1st is when it's starting to come back.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Bill. All right, so moving on to slide number first, I should ask if there's any questions on that before we move on.
Okay. Hi, Greg. This is Tim Thompson. With the low, and the preemptible, is it still 12 hours? And what happens when it's preempted? Does it bring the whole thing down and then restart?
Yes, that is correct. So It'll take, you know, to writing a good preemptive job takes a little bit of work to make sure that it restarts properly and can resume from where it, however far it got during that period of time. We're still working out the details of how much progress you actually make before the job is considered to be preemptible, but we'll document all that once we've ironed all the details for that. So we hope that's a useful feature for some of the teams.
So the goal of the low priority is that those jobs run when there's nothing else at a higher priority, either high or medium or debug. So those jobs will run, but if the resources are needed to start a job at a higher priority, then that's when the preemption would take place. It would free up the system to start the jobs as they come in at higher priority. So that's really the logic.
Okay. Another question on that. It's just sort of a system technical question on the preempting. So would it be a normal kill, or would we be able to incorporate like a delivery of a special signal to get to allow those jobs to get a final check?
Right. That's something that we were discussing and we haven't looked into yet. So, but certainly, whatever the process is, we'll see if it's possible to send something other than a QDEL. So. We did discuss that. Right, so moving on to slide number 6, storage update. So there really isn't anything necessarily new here. It's just that as of the recent changes in the Nearline system coming online and the interrupt Nearline app switched over to read-only. So I think most of the points of contact were the NSF PREC people who were on during that time and were using the Nearline app have been contacted and hopefully have been working with people from the storage group to get the data transferred from the old, from the interim HPSS system over to the new HPS system. And we've had a few hiccups, I think, with the Nearline system and maybe Globus Online, but as far as I can tell, a significant amount of data has been transferred over, and I don't have actual numbers right now. I forgot to get those updated, but I think seems to be doing quite well in staff testing. Intermittent staff testing seems to show that it's performing as expected or even better than expected. One of the things that we will be adding, if not in the configuration yet, is a generic resource for users to denote that they are going to be doing HPSS file transfer access type operations within the job. And so there'll be a HPSS generic resource specifier that'll allow us to monitor those jobs and take action accordingly to ensure that there's no interruption to the job, that files and transfers, et cetera. And that goes for staging and for transfers. And so we've been working with some users on using, for example, the Globus Online command line interface, and we've documented that on the portal, and that's a useful tool for doing that kind of file staging or transfer. So with the opening up of the Nearline, we've also implemented quotas, both on the Lustre file system and also on the tape archive on the Nearline HPSS system. So the three file systems for Lustre have their quotas enabled. I guess actually for Scratch, quotas aren't technically enabled. We had to disable those. If you look at the quota system, you'll see that they are not. We're having a little hiccup with some interaction with the quota software. But for the home and project, it's currently enabled or enforced. And one thing that users should realize is that the Nearline HPSS hierarchy also reflects the hierarchy for the home and projects on Lustre. So each project has a home, or each user has a home space both on Lustre and on the HPSS, and each project has space on projects and also on projects on the Nearline system. So you need to keep that in mind depending on where you're transferring your data onto the Nearline, whether those files should belong in your home directory, or if it's for the project, then they should fall under the project space for that particular project. And the quotas there are listed in the table. People have asked about increasing quota limits, and we do take that into consideration, and so you just have to send us an email, and we have a special special request queue for our ticket system that it gets put into, and we review those and have some discussion about the requirements for your increase in quota. And that's one thing to work with. One thing that we're setting up is file aging and purging of files. Our policy will be for file aging after a two-week period that they'll become eligible for purging. And I don't know if that's actually enforced at the moment. We do have the data for purging being collected, but it's not actively enabled at the moment.
Will there be a notification before it's turned on?
Yeah, but it'll be pretty. It'll be within the next month.
Yeah.
So the scratch file system is getting reasonably full. So once there's enough time to move some things to the new mass storage system, so people should expect it to be turned on within the next month.
Yeah, we're working hard.
So we'll try to notify people a week in advance or something of it being turned on. We're not going to be sending out warnings about we're going to purge now. It will be purged on a regular basis all the time. So it will not be the exception to the rule when we actually do that. It'll be actually the ongoing rule.
Yeah, we really will work hard to avoid the case where we have to send out emergency emails saying that scratch is nearing capacity. So our goal will be to avoid that. Let's see here. So moving on to slide, any questions about the status of the storage policies and configuration? If not, we'll move on to slide 7, application resiliency suggestions. So some of these come in from the recent PROC workshop that we had, and some of the things came by way of how we were doing some of our jobs for the acceptance testing. And we found that we've been, a lot of users have been able to run long-running jobs, especially jobs that ask for a substantial number of nodes, that they should write their job in such a way that they're able to continue running if they have a node failure, for example, the job itself won't necessarily be terminated. An app run itself can handle a certain amount of failure to it. And if your application can run with a different number of tasks, or if you ask for a few extra nodes and you can app run can utilize those, then you're able to provide a certain level of job resiliency, which we find to be quite useful. It eliminates the overhead of waiting for resources to become available for PBS or and also for the startup and takedown of nodes for jobs. So we find that's a very effective and useful way to improve your utilization or our utilization of the system. We have some of that documented on the portal as well. And to offer guidance for how often applications should do checkpointing, we have some of the information that's needed. We don't really have the full mean time to interruption for user applications, but we have information that we've been collecting for a while on some of the hardware events, and we're working towards providing more of a mean time to interruption. But the discussion that we've had so far is with the mean time between failure for that one can calculate or compute based on node failure. And we've seen very, very low node failure on our system. We're averaging just about 3 nodes for every 24 hours, node failure, which is very low, and that allows us to come up with a handy expression here in terms of node count. So the mean time between failure for an application running with a certain node count can be expressed in terms of basically the formula that's given there in the bottom half of slide 7, which is inversely proportional to the node count. So if you were to run on the full machine, you would expect to see a node failure once every 8 hours. And you would want to implement your checkpoint policy based for your application using at least something less than that number. You have to account for some kind of risk that you could go as far as 8 hours without a node failure, which is possible, but you know that is risky. And so you want to make sure that you adequately implement a certain number of checkpoints during your execution run. The other factors that need to be taken into that account would be the time for the checkpoint and other factors that could cause job interruption besides node failure. So this is something that we're actively developing as we go along and monitor the performance of the system with the substantial workload variation that we have with the different NSF PRACs and the EGL CPC workloads. So is there any questions on some of the information that we have here for the application resiliency? Okay, so we're near the end of our teleconference. It's almost 10 till 2. So finally, we'd like to try to work better with the science and engineering application teams, both the NSF PRACs and the GLTPC, to get information as more current than necessarily waiting for annual reports, for example, information on publications, presentations, other products that are being developed with time on Blue Waters. That would greatly help us understand what's going on in the system and how it's working for you, and also is a good thing for representing what's going on the system to the public and to the funding agencies as well. So there's two mechanisms that we have for providing that information. So for people who are team members who are part of the NSF PRAC team, your point of contact would be the person to send that information to. And we are currently discussing how best to get that information periodically without being too intrusive. And so we're hoping that the PIs and the different team members provide that information as it comes up. And for all teams, both NSF PRAC or even the GLTPC people and future allocations, we have a share results section on the portal, which points you to contacting people within the public affairs department here at NCSA, and that's another method that we use for collecting information for how your allocations are being used in producing the highest quality science that can be done.
So let me just add a little bit. This is actually a request from Irene Qualters and NSF. So I think the motivation is that it's important to for her and NSF to be able to understand the impacts being made by Blue Waters and their investments. The standard way of doing that via an annual report on an award probably leads to up to a 2-year delay in terms of what the progress is and when something starts getting into a paper that's submitted versus when it's actually published versus when it actually gets into a report to Irene. And we need to have your cooperation to accelerate that type of information going that she can use to explain the return on investment. We know sometimes it may take a year to get something into the highest quality publication, but just the fact that there's a submission in that, and it's not necessarily something that would be public, but knowing for the stakeholders and to some extent others, us and as well, but being able to pass that to Irene to say something of note was prepared for publication, submitted, is important. Certainly knowing if it's accepted for publication is equally important for her to see that there's progress going on rather than have a delay of a year or two before there's any documented activity that would come through the annual report. So she's asked us to help expedite the information flow from you to her. It would be perfectly fine if everybody did that directly to her also. That'd be great for the PRAC awards or even the other awards, GLCPC. So going direct and informing her of progress or things that are interestingly done, I think would be also very beneficial, not just for Blue Waters and her, but also for your own awards. So we're advocating and hopefully will facilitate a frequent set of information that can be used by her and the stakeholders in NSF. Everybody in NSF is very interested in how this will progress. So that's really the motivation, and doing it in a way that is most efficient for you all and us, and also for her, is what we're looking to work with you all for.
All right. Thanks, Bill, for that discussion. Any questions on that before we move on? I know we're getting short on time, so if we can move on to slide 9, upcoming events. So we'll have the next Blue Waters user webinar will be May 20th. We haven't established exactly what that content will be. I have on the next slide suggested topics that would be possible, and if people have some other items that they may want to hear, that would be great. So for NSF PRAC people, there's a NEES P-Squared symposium that's or direct funding support May 21st and 22nd, and we're going to tie with that a new user workshop for some of the new allocation people, targeting mainly the GLTPC and other allocation methods, but if there are any new PRAC users who would benefit from it, that's fine. It's not going to be, it'll be a little different, a little higher level overview and emphasis as opposed to the most recent Blue Waters workshop, which was targeting a little more advanced features of Blue Waters. And so that information is going to be available on the workshop's portal page. And the thing to remind is that when the people who have registered for the new user workshop, we are encouraging them, if they're interested, to attend also the PRAC symposium, where they can learn about some of the research that some of the PRAC teams have been doing over the last year, focusing on different aspects of the Blue Waters system. So that'll be on the registration page. It should be available. Should have been available today. So finally, topics for future teleconferences and webinars in slide 10. Some of the things that users suggested during the Blue Waters workshop that they'd like to see additional information on would be a discussion on XK and Kepler features and tuning, for example. So differences with respect to the Fermi GPU and what advantages there are with using the Kepler GPU, or features for the XK architecture that would be beneficial. Other users have suggested some advanced topics on running jobs and app run. So app run, you know, it's MPI run in a way, but it has a lot of advanced features. And other things about running jobs on the system that we could do, or there was some discussion about having additional information on doing visualization using Visit. So that's something that we could target. So if you have any preferences for items that you'd like to hear for the next workshop, which will be next teleconference or webinar, which will be next May, let us know. That'd be great. And I think we just basically have a few minutes for open discussion. If there are any items that people want to discuss in the next few minutes, that would be great. Sounds very quiet out there. Hopefully some of you are busy eating lunch during this time. So thank you everyone for attending, and I'll probably see if I can make this teleconference recording available on the portal, as well as hopefully a transcript of it as well, along with the slides for people who weren't able to attend. And we appreciate everyone attending. We look forward to having you attend the May 20th teleconference webinar. And we look forward to the PRAC teams that are coming for the NEES P-Squared Symposium. We'll see you next month as well. All right. Any questions before we end this teleconference? It doesn't sound like it. All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.